Now, it's my great pleasure to share with you today a really inspiring story of how women are being empowered to fight the scourge of poaching. We're going to be introducing you to Africa's first armed all-female anti-poaching unit and talking about how and why they're enjoying such success in their efforts to protect our endangered wildlife. With me in studio is the man who helped set up that unit, Damian Mander, who is an Australian by birth, began his career in the Aussie Royal Navy as a clearance diver, moved into an elite counter-terrorism unit within the Australian Defence Force, and worked as a Special Forces sniper. I mean, Damien, that is a description of arguably the biggest boys' club I've ever encountered in my life. I'm sure our listeners are going to be as intrigued as I am to hear how that man ends up running an all-female poaching unit. But maybe we can start with what led you out of the military into conservation in the first place.
Yeah, g'day, Pippa. How you doing? Thanks very much for having me here today. So, yeah, I finished up the military, including 3 years in Iraq, and that was almost 10 years for me. And then looking for the what next, and I suppose for a lot of, I'll say guys, you know, men and women coming out of those roles, the real war doesn't start until the bullets stop and you're trying to figure out how to reintegrate back into society. And I went off the rails and eventually, you know, ended up in Africa, just travelling around and looking to put what is essentially a set of unsavoury skills to a different use, and found conservation. But I'll say I came here for the wrong reasons. I came looking for a fight, not a cause. And it was seeing the rangers and people involved with conservation that had dedicated, in some cases, their entire life to fighting for what was right, and seeing what was happening to animals that inspired me to look at things differently.
What a story. I mean, I love what you've just said about coming here looking for a fight. You found a fight of a completely different nature, taking the fight against poaching. As you said, it's a unique skill set that you had that's not that easy to transfer into the private sector. I believe, having identified that you wanted to do something in nature conservation, you literally sold your home in Australia, gave everything up to throw into this new passion of yours, and created the International Anti-Poaching Foundation. I mean, were people skeptical when you told them what you were going to do? When they met you and heard what your next was going to be, were they surprised?
Oh, naturally, and I understand that now, because I get an email a day from someone just like me, who I was 11 years ago, wanting to run around the bush and hunt poachers. And you realise it's not about that. It's there's much more to conservation. And it's been the journey that I've come through that has allowed me to look at the lessons I've learned along the way, and in particular the military in Iraq and how things are done in a local context, and what is sustainable for long term. To give you context around that, one of my roles in Iraq, I was part of a management team that was recruited by a US coalition and under the Iraqi Ministry of Interior to recruit, train, equip and deploy battalion-sized groups of Iraqi National Police and Special Police and send them around the country. And everywhere we sent those groups, we caused more conflict because those men weren't from that area. And my one takeaway from Iraq is that you cannot send in a foreign force, and when I say foreign, it doesn't have to be international, but a force that's not from that area, you can't send them in to a region and expect them to have a long-term good relationship with the local community. And there's no example in history of that being done successfully.
And this it's that realization you've applied to the unit that's been set up in the Lower Zambezi Valley. I believe it was a sort of a chance encounter with an article about the US Army's Elite Ranger School that sort of had a light bulb effect on you of going, maybe there's a way of doing this differently?
It was a combination of factors that led me up to looking at you know, basically in desperation, looking at different ways to do things. You know, I've built a career across three continents in training men only and bringing them to the point where they're ready for combat, and women never featured in that equation. And we were tasked with a project along the Kruger National Park border on the Mozambique side of the fence, and you know, we scaled that up to include four different government departments, 165 personnel. We had helicopters, aeroplanes, canine attack teams. There were drones. We essentially had an ongoing war with the local population there. Mm. We were successful in stopping poachers from coming through, but we weren't sustainable because the UN Population Division tells us there's going to be 2 billion people on the continent by 2040, and it will be the people that decide the future of conservation, not bigger fences and more guns, and in an industry that's becoming increasingly militarised and hostile with local indigenous communities. We wanted to find a different way of doing things. also reading about other industries getting ahead by getting more women on the board, more women into management positions, and then looking at different models in conservation where women were given certain access but not full access. And without full access, they're not getting the experience they need to rise up into genuine management. And on the ground in most countries across Africa, women are outnumbered by men at a ratio of around 100 to 1. Hmm. So we wanted to, you know, I was as curious as I was ambitious in trying this out. And we did the final straw to say, let's go and do this, was reading an article in the New York Times about the US Army Rangers putting women through their training for deployment onto the front lines. And the relevance to that is 10 years earlier, our convoy had been blown up in northern Baghdad. And we were actually rescued by US Army Rangers, all men at the time. But I thought if that unit is now training women for deployment, maybe women can be wildlife rangers as well. And proper ones, not stuck sitting on a fence or walking along a fence line somewhere.
Which leads us then to what's going on in the Lower Zambezi Valley. So you've taken this concept of recognizing that you've got to have buy-in and direct involvement of local communities if this is going to work. How did you identify the communities that you were going to tap into, and what was it like walking into those villages and saying, I want women and I want women, I want to train as a game ranger? What was the response?
About two and a half years later, a small group of women have achieved what very few armies in history have ever done, and that is to win the hearts and minds of the local community. We needed to find a blank canvas. We didn't want to go and displace men that already had a job. And we looked at the downturn in the trophy hunting industry, mm-hmm. An area which across Africa has collectively had about as much land as the size of France set aside. So about 700,000 square kilometres. And that's a huge chunk of land. Now, that the trophy hunting industry, and I will not say this in South Africa because it's actually doing reasonably well down here, but in other countries, larger, wider open ecosystems, it is diminishing as an industry, generally due to reduced wildlife populations, shifting in policy around the export of trophies, and just a younger generation raised on social media that doesn't want to hunt anymore.
Yeah.
And so we found a blank area that had been left vacant by a failed trophy hunting operation. We went and spoke to the local chiefs and rural district council and said, we want to trial this program in a very patriarchal society in a country that, when I first arrived there in 2009, had the lowest life expectancy in the world for a woman. And that was 34 years of age. And we had to convince them that putting women from these rural communities onto the front lines into harm's way in a traditionally male-dominated role was a good idea. And that took some convincing, hey? Yeah.
I can only imagine. Now, we're talking about the area on the southern edge of the Mana Pools Reserve in the Lower Zambezi Valley. You went into 29 different local villages, and Damon, you didn't just go and say, give me your women to train. You specifically went in saying, I'm looking for women in marginalized position, women who have been victims of sexual assault, who are single mothers, who are AIDS orphans, women who are really on the fringes of survival. What motivated you to take that approach?
Maybe just being an Aussie, I think. You know, if you're going to try and provide an opportunity, then do it for the ones that need it the most. And that's just sort of the culture I come from. And there was no real great thought process to it other than, you know, if we're going into a tough area, let's give it to the ones that are doing it the toughest. What we didn't realize at the time is we were getting the toughest. And we, you know, we started selection there on day one, and then the traditional leaders gave us 3 days to prove or fail this program. Normally with men, we'd do a quick selection over one day. In the eyes of most, the women had more to prove, so we tripled the length of time that we would take to do initial selection. We had 87 women come down from those 29 villages, and about halfway through day one, we knew we had something that was very different, different to anything I'd been involved with before, after almost 20 years at that stage of working exclusively with men.
Hmm. So the end of that training program, you've got your first unit, the Akashinga, as they are nicknamed, Shona for the Brave Ones. They are an armed unit, but I gather in the first year, Damien, all of the arrests of poachers that took place without a single shot being fired. Is that still the case?
Yeah, well, the women have now made 187 arrests. We're 2.5 years into the program, and only during one of those contacts were shots fired. Women, and one of the main skills that they have is to be able to naturally de-escalate tension. And what that does is it reduces our need for an increasingly militarized response. So unintentionally. There's been a lot of unintentionals from this program. Unintentionally, we cut our cooperating budget by 2/3. It allows us to put that money into other things like women's development, community development. But having a less militarized approach means we don't have helicopters and aeroplanes and canine attack teams and all that fancy military hardware. We actually have interpersonal relationships driven at household level by the women that came from that village, those villages, women whose parents grew up in that society, women whose children will be raised in those communities, women that have a long-term vested interest in the welfare of that community.
So what is it about the way they react and interact with that community that changes the messaging? Because we hear over and over again that there is poverty, there's desperation everywhere. For every poacher who is arrested and taken out of the system, there are another 10 people desperate enough to potentially take their place. What has been the game changer here?
So the game changer for us is shifting our strategy on how we look at wildlife conservation. And instead of when the women came in, instead of saying, here's a paycheck, here's the tools, we'll give you the training, go out and defend that area. The first thing we asked them, we said, what are your dreams? What do you want to be and where do you want to go? And becoming a ranger is simply a platform for them to do that, for them to dream. We put women's empowerment at the center of our conservation strategy. It gives us the greatest traction in community development, and conservation becomes a byproduct of happy and developing communities. We also get to spend the same dollar 3 times, first on women's empowerment, second as the most effective single dollar that can be spent on community development, and third as it was initially intended for a conservation dollar. Women have different value systems. My background is counterinsurgency warfare. We're trained to look for a fight and to finish it. Women are a little bit different and tend to want to talk to a problem before they blow it up or shoot it. And when you're trying to have a relationship with tens of thousands of people that live alongside an area that you don't have the resources to protect properly, having a relationship is much better than having a war.
So these women are earning an income. That income gets ploughed back into the village they came from. The benefit of that spend is shared by the community. They become a vested partner in protecting the wildlife sanctuary alongside them.
Exactly. And the economics for us shifts with the employment of women and putting them at the center of that strategy historically. And as we see a lot with national parks departments, not just in Zimbabwe, but around Africa, is similar to what we did in Iraq. It's a centralized system where people are brought in from around the country. They're sent to head office, they're trained, and then they're deployed out for a certain amount of years to a particular area before being moved on. We also repeated that in the private and the NGO sector, where we would recruit men from around the country, bring them in to defend an area, and then send them home. And the reason we brought them in from outside is so they're not influenced by corruption, people they grew up with, and collusion. We're 2.5 years into this program now, and we haven't had a single incidence of corruption with the women. And what that does is it allows us to recruit exclusively from the local community rather than from around the country, and turns the largest line item in our budget, which is ranger salaries, it turns that into a direct community investment at household level rather than something that's been dispersed around the country. On paper, we're putting the same amount into the local community every 34 days as what trophy hunting was able to do per annum there.
Wow.
The bottom line, triple gears, is women spend 80 to 90% of their salary on family and local community versus a male that spends 30 to 40%.
What a story. And I mean, the women themselves, as we mentioned, you recruited some of the most vulnerable and abused women in those communities. Talk to us about the kind of change it's brought in their lives.
Every one of them has a story, and each story is heartbreaking as the next. And what my 40-odd years on this planet, sitting through the stories of those women during the initial selection, we started this program with 16 women. We've now got 160 staff. There'll be another 160 by April next year. On target for 1,000 by 2025. Women like Kelly, who was raped at the age of 16, had a child to the rapist, unable to afford it, and in that culture it was taken away and given to the parents of the father, the rapist, to look after. She hadn't seen her daughter, Cleopatra, for 2.5 years, came and joined us as a ranger, and went and saved up her money, bought her own land, built her own house together with us, the organisation. We took it to court. She won full custody back of her child and brought her into the house that she'd built right alongside the area she's protecting. Dionette, taken as a child right at the age of 14, raped repeatedly, beaten 4 children by the time she was 18. The chief took her away from her husband and sent her to live with her grandparents. And she came with us, got a job, got trained, got her confidence up, went back to the house where the husband and the children were, left a vehicle out the front with some of the other women. I'm not one to condone violence. She went inside, she beat the crap out of the husband, kicked him out of the house, took the house and the kids back, hasn't been seen since. Speaking to the chief of police there, he told us that even though there's been a huge increase in reporting, a historical reporting of rape and sexual assault, since this program has started in these villages, there's been a 60% downturn in rape cases.
Do you think that is because it has changed the way men are viewing the women in their community, that they are seeing them in a different light in terms of power dynamics?
It's, you know, there's this sort of form of social engineering going on that is happening there, which is a dynamic within itself. A combination of men, not every man likes the fact these women have a job and a uniform and proud and going against cultural grain, but after 187 arrests, they respect it. And vice versa, women realizing they have a voice, they have strength. It's more important to be respected than it is to be liked. Women that are getting jobs, buying houses, buying land, going to university, going to school, getting their families back together, building businesses, having an entrepreneurial streak, all these things. And so, above all, setting an example within these communities of what's possible.
Just for those who've joined us late to the conversation and are asking who you're listening to, my guest in studio is Damian Mander, who is talking to us about the establishment of the Akashinga, the Brave Ones, the all-female game ranger unit, which is in operation in Punduna Nature Reserve, which is just on the sort of southern edge of the Mana Pools Reserve, which I think many people will know, in the lower Zambezi Valley. I mean, Damian, is this, you talk about scaling up this particular project. Is this replicable in other countries? Is it something that you've looked at? Where to, in terms of taking this model and making it work elsewhere?
So we started with one reserve. We've now got 8 reserves under contract in Zimbabwe. We helped Jochen Zeitz, who's got the museum here in Cape Town, replicate the model up in Segera, his reserve in Kenya. I've just got back meeting with the former president of Botswana, Ian Khama, discussing options in that country. We're looking at countries where trophy hunting has been used as an economic model previously and maybe not doing so well anymore, and creating opportunities for us for different land uses or different economic models to implement and support those communities. So it's not necessarily something we want to take on all upon ourselves. It's about building best practices and making that available to industry.
Do you have government support in Zimbabwe at all?
President Mnangagwa's daughter is one of our rangers.
Really?
And this is another dynamic too with conservation, where often the most important ingredient is political will, and governments previously having to make a choice between an increasingly militarized model of conservation or communities alongside those areas employing those tactics. And if the government is seen to favour conservation, they're seen to be putting the lives of animals above the lives of the community and people. Mm. And whichever way you look at it, people vote, animals don't. And in this case, with the de-escalation intention and demilitarisation of what we're doing and basing our model on relationships, the government hasn't had to make a choice. And so they've been right behind us all the way.
So I just want to quickly mention to our listeners, if you, as many of you are indicating on the SMS line, you're enjoying listening to this interview, you're finding the conversation inspiring and uplifting, I do want to mention that Damian is going to be speaking at St. Cyprian School in Oranjezicht this Thursday evening, where you'll get the longer, fuller version of what's happening with this project. And that is open to the public. There are still tickets available if you would like to attend, at a cost of 250 Rand a head on Quicket. And that cost includes not only the talk, but also some wine and canapes for the evening. So that's Thursday evening, 6:30 p.m. at St. Cyprian School in Oranjezicht. And I should also mention that one very lucky member of that audience is going to win the extraordinary experience of having a 3-night stay for 2 people, compliments of Wilderness Safaris at Mana Pools in the Lower Zambezi, which is a prize valued at over 100,000 rand. So if you're interested, what further motivation do you need to be there on Thursday evening? Damian, I know you're taking this message not only to members of the public on Thursday evening, but to schools while you're here in Cape Town, and particularly to girls' schools. There's a lot of value in hearing a story like this for young women.
Yeah, it's important to get out there and speak not only to young girls, young women, but young boys as well, and get the message out there. I've just finished a tour of North America with National Geographic Live as well. So we've been getting some good crowds over there. And James Cameron is actually about to release a documentary on the women at the Tribeca Film Festival. I believe it's coming out there in April. So, yeah. But, yeah, I think... You're about to kick me off.
I am. I have to just say, I mean, one of the, I know that there have been a number of journalists who followed the story, and one of the images of one of your rangers was one of the award winners at the World Press Photography Exhibition, and I saw it last year in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
It was such a striking South African image, South African photographer, and I hadn't realized, I hadn't sort of made the connection until researching for this interview. I mean, it's a story that is really making waves around the world.
Yeah, it's and so it should. You've got a group of women from one of the toughest places doing one of the most respected and hardest jobs on the planet, out there in the middle of nowhere, and they're thriving. They're actually all doing it on a plant-based diet as well.
There's a whole conversation there for another half an hour, which we don't have right now. But Damien Mader, fascinating to have you in studio. Thank you so much.
Can
for
I just say thank you to all the listeners, and if anyone wants to have a look online, www.iapf.org. The International Anti-Poaching Foundation. We're also a Section 18A charity here in South Africa. Thank you.
iapf.org. And for Thursday evening, your booking is via Quicket, 250 rand a ticket. It kicks off at 6:30 at St. Cyprian School. Look forward to chatting to you further then.
Thank you so much, Pippa.